morning, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 134 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively right here on listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by crmw.net and have a look at what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is Wednesday, April 23rd, 2008. And speaking of dates, yesterday was Agnes' birthday, Agnes Kincaid. I'd like to send a shout out to her and thank her for all of the things that she does behind the scenes to keep the Head On Radio Network in good shape. If you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time or shortly after 6 p.m. Pacific on April the 23rd of 08, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and participate. The telephone number for doing that is toll-free 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877-4-H-E-A-D-O-N. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. Show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And there you're going to find links to the guests as well as to the audio archives from the past shows and the interviews that we've done. You'll find links there to our chat room. And by the way, the chat room is a great way to participate in the Head On Radio Network programming. It's active during all of the live programming on the network, and you'll find some of the most comical and smartest people on the planet there. You'll find the link to the chat room at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Just click on that link and it'll take you right there. Just create yourself a username. It's free and log right in. You'll also find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the main site. That's headonradionetwork.com. And you can find about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Tonight is a Just Us edition of Strictly Confidential. Just Us editions give us a chance to catch up on the news and the music that we have missed. Our guest last evening was a remarkable fellow indeed. I've heard from him a couple of times today. He's pointed me in the direction of some interviews that we're going to definitely book on the show, or at least do our very best to do so. An amazing fellow known as the Godfather of the gay rights movement in Sacramento, California. That was Jerry Sloan last evening. Great interview. If you'd like to go to the audio archives and listen to that, you find the archives there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And speaking of music on the show, tonight's gay bar across the street DJ is the world's most dangerous yet somehow lovable DJ, Mr. Larry Sanders. He'll be hosting the Paradise Dance Hall across the street. That segment runs shortly after 10:30 each evening and runs during the last segment of the show. Larry has also provided us with the other music that we'll use during the show this evening, some quite wonderful Motown remixes that you've never heard. We'll tell you more about those later as they come up. Okay, let's have a look here at the stack. Where to begin? There are so many places to go. The most remarkable, this isn't the longest story. Normally I start with a longer one. But a log closet Republican has actually come out and spoken the truth, or at least as close to the truth as a log closet Republican can possibly come. For those of you who are new to the show, log closet Republicans are what we fondly refer to the log cabin Republicans as, which, if you don't know that, those are Republican LGBT folks, although I've never seen a Republican L in the log closet Republicans. It must be mostly the G's. One wonders, They normally stick to the story that when they're asked how they could remain in a party that is so opposite of anything that remotely resembles giving the LGBT community the rights that are in the Constitution or actually providing them those rights, they say, well, you know, the only way the Republican Party is going to change is if the change comes from within. And all I can tell you is, honey, give it up. It's just not working. In any case, we have a Christopher Latimer who is, in a sense, referring to John McCain as being a wolf in sheep's clothing. This is of great interest to me simply because the log cabin Republicans have been promoting John McCain, and in fact, they all have pictures of him on their nightstand and little love notes and campaign contributions and the whole bit. You know, McCain is referred to as a maverick in the Republican Party because he doesn't necessarily conform to the conservative agenda. Ann Coulter, sometimes referred to as Man Coulter, has beat him about the brow as being a traitor to conservatives. And in fact, at one point she said she would campaign for Hillary Clinton if McCain was the Republican nominee. Of course he is, and we haven't seen Man Coulter do that, but, you know, they're all full of hot air anyway. Rush Limbaugh has also weighed in on McCain by declaring that his nomination would destroy the Republican Party from God's lips. Are actually your lips to God's ears. But, you know, Rush, you are on loan from God, so you have his ear is far closer to you than to the average man. James Dobson has said that he could not in good conscience vote for McCain. Now, you add all those issues up, you add all those statements up, and you sort of looks like it's looking good for the log cabin Republicans, and that there is a basis for the LGBT community to look at and look favorably upon a McCain presidency. McCain has been characterized in the gay community as taking, and I quote, a courageous stand on important gay-related issues like same-sex marriage. Now, it's interesting that this reference to taking a courageous stand is being quoted by the very fellow who is now actually speaking the truth, or at least as close as a log cabin Republican can speak the truth, is one of the organizations. The Log Cabin Republicans is one of the organizations that has so desperately been promoting McCain as being a maverick and someone who is good for the LGBT community. You see, McCain opposed the constitutional amendment that would ban same-sex marriage. Now, the log cabin folks heralded that as a great step, where the evangelical Christians have used that to attack McCain and his conservative credentials. McCain's opposition, however, to the same-sex marriage amendment was not based on fairness. He opposed the gay marriage amendment to the Constitution of the United States not because of fairness or because of equality or because of individual rights or anything that your normal person would think of. McCain opposed this amendment to the Constitution because of his long-standing support for states' rights. States' rights, by the way, is code for discrimination. Well, coming from the South, I can state that pretty clearly, that's how we do it here. We call it states' rights, and we can classify any group that we like as being undesirable. The fact that McCain is for states' rights is a classic conservative view, has absolutely nothing to do with any openness to the needs of the LGBT community. You know, if McCain, this is pointed out, by the way, by Christopher, I'm not just editorializing here. Christopher has come out and said that the presidential power of appointment under Article 2 would have great ramifications for the LGBT community at both state and federal level if McCain is elected. What's this? The log closets turning their back on McCain? Unheard of. He says if McCain is not actively hostile toward the LGBT community, his cabinet, his judicial appointments, the rest of his herd will have a far greater negative impact on the LGBT community than his presidency alone. Bob was alluding to McCain's selection of justices for the Supreme Court earlier on his show. If he were elected, it would be a huge devastation for this country in terms of rights and progressing. You see, the Attorney General is the final arbitrator when it comes to pursuing legal discrimination cases. And if you give McCain the ability to appoint that person, well, let me put it like this. McCain has come out and already worked very hard against approving the federal hate crimes bill and also the Federal Employment Non-Discrimination Act. So I think that makes a huge statement as to the kind of attorney general he might appoint. Another impacting issue, according to, by the way, the log cabin Republicans, is the Supreme Court. McCain has expressed his disdain for activist judges. He's praised President Bush for nominating individuals who are, quote, strictly interpreting the Constitution. Of course, that's code for conservative. McCain's also taken a mandatory pledge, and by that I say that flippantly, or at least in jest. It's a mandatory Republican clubhouse sort of a thing, like knowing the secret password. McCain has taken that mandatory pledge to nominate justices who resemble Justice John Roberts, Associate Justice Samuel Alito, Antonin, Scalia, Clarence Thomas. You know, Alito's yet to rule on any case regarding sexual orientation, but it is well known that both Scalia and Thomas are very hostile to the LGBT community. Both dissented stridently in Lawrence versus Texas back in 2003 when same-sex sodomy laws were repealed in Texas between two consenting adults who were having sex in the privacy of their own home, and the police burst the door in pretending there was a noise complaint, and then arrested them for doing the nasty privacy of their own home. And here comes the money. Here comes the money shot from the gay Republican. You gotta love this. Christopher Latimer says, as a gay Republican, I often get asked why I belong to a party which is openly hostile toward gays. My response is that change will be more likely to occur from within. Sound familiar? A McCain presidency would represent a shift from an administration that used gay rights as a campaign tactic to scare moderates. Well, that's a kind word for the knuckle-draggers. Moderates. And galvanize the Christian wrong. However, I'm not so sure that his neutral tone would represent a benefit for us. What? Is there a crack in the log closet Republican armor? This doesn't mean that as a community we should blindly support the Democratic nominee for president. Oh, no, no, no. But let's not be naive in our evaluation of McCain and what his presidency could do or fail to do for gay rights in America. Well, now, isn't that just like a log cabin Republican to just not come out and say, for crying out, people, vote for the Democratic Party? Either one of the candidates will get you a lot further, if only for Supreme Court appointments alone, than McCain. But he says in Republican code, this doesn't mean that as a community we should blindly report the Democratic nominee. It means that you should support the Democratic nominee as an informed decision. You can't just quite come out and say it. And he's also implying, in fact, let's not be naive in our evaluation of McCain. Read that slightly differently, and it reads, you are naive in putting McCain in the office of the President of the United States, even though this organization, the Log Closet Republicans, have supported it, supported McCain since the very beginning, or, well, it was anything but Huckabee and, oh, no, they were in bed with Giuliani to begin with. I'd forgotten about Giuliani. You know, the hopes of the poor Log Closet Republicans, they just keep getting dashed every year. What in the hell are you people doing? You know, changing the Republican Party is like taking Satan out of hell. You're not going to do it. Furthermore, if you like George Bush's foreign policy, you're going to love McCain's foreign policy. McCain, just like little George, sees the world in terms of opposition, us versus them, good versus evil. McCain has spoken frequently in the past, and the battle that we're waging in Iraq, he reads it as, in fighting this transcendent issue of our time, the battle and struggle against radical Islamic extremism. To him, you see, the transcendent struggle is the struggle between good and evil. We talk about that from time to time on the Head On Radio Network. But, no, it's hard to fight a noun. Terrorism. This summed up by saying that McCain may know what he believes about the world, but the world bears little resemblance to what McCain believes. Our good friends over at the Service Members Legal Defense Network, we've had a couple of those folks on the show in the past, are going to go on a tour fighting Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They're doing this on the heels of the fact that the Army and Marine Corps is now bringing in significantly more recruits with felony convictions than they did in 2006. This is because they're continuing to remove LGBT officers and fighting staff from the ranks, and continuing to play the Don't Ask, Don't Tell game. These new recruits for the Army and the Marine Corps have been convicted, felony convictions of manslaughter, sex crimes, even terrorism. Yes, that's right. Having a terrorist in the Army or the Marine Corps is far, far better to this country than having a law-abiding LGBT individual in the military. And by terrorist, I'm talking about bomb threats and the whole gamut. The data that's been released by a congressional committee shows the number of soldiers admitted to the Army with felony records jumped from 249 in 06 to 511 in 07. That's twice as much. Now, that's the Army. In the Marines, the felons rose from 208 reported in 06 to 350. And the bulk of the crime were crimes were burglary, theft, drug offenses, sex crimes, manslaughter, vehicular homicide, arson. Yep, it's much incest. Oh, there's a veritable who's who of crimes here. I could take a dart and throw it and hit any felony crime, and you will find one in the military because they're lowering the standards lower and lower and lower. According to the Army, 18% of the recruits needed to conduct waivers in the fiscal year. 18% required a waiver versus 15%. One of the deputy of operations for the Army, and Lieutenant General James Thurman, said, "We're growing the Army as fast as we can, and we need the waivers." He said, "It's about leadership. These people deserve a second chance," whereas, you know, the LGBT community doesn't even get a first chance. And to add to that, the Department of Defense, individuals from the Department of Defense quoted in the Washington Post are saying, "Would I like to see the waivers lowered?" Well, yes, meaning the standards of the waivers. Let's go ahead and let in the criminally insane. Let's just take them, just put a little drip bag of Thorazine on them and send them all back out there. That's better than the LGBT community. And again, this fellow says, we're growing fast. We need the waivers. This doesn't bother us. You got to give people an opportunity to serve. And which is probably chapter one of the rise and fall of the Americas, when you start having criminals going over to coat Iraq in nuclear dust. It's amazing to me. See, last fall, the Pentagon quietly began looking for ways to make it easier with people with minor criminal records to join the military, but it's pretty much spiraled out of control. You see, the recruiters are already doing it. The recruiters are already letting in the criminals and undesirables simply by telling them to not report it or to not say it. Oh, you shouldn't say that, young man. If I put that down here, you're not going to get in. All right, well, fine, officer, then that never happened. The stolen cars, you know. The Marines have a whole different set of statistics. The Marines are the ones taking the arsonists and the incest folks. 235 of the Marine Corps' 350 waivers were for various types of theft, assaults, manslaughters. 5 were for terrorism, including bomb threats, which... by the way, I will say for the sailors, their statistics have dropped. They had 48. See, it's the Army and the Marines that are the ones that are most desperately recruiting. Sailors being less involved directly in the war don't need to do that quite as aggressively. Their numbers slipped from 48 to 42 regarding waivers. There were no Air Force waivers for felony convictions in 2007. In any case, the folks over at the Service Members Legal Defense Network, they're assembling a board members. This is taking place in San Diego on Thursday. It was to kick off a 6-city tour in an effort to repeal the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell. As we're here to engage San Diegans in the effort to lift the ban on gays in the military. Don't Ask, Don't Tell results in the losses of thousands of talented and skilled service members, not to mention the impacts on their family. Speaking of world news, there are several little choice articles I have kept back. It's been a while since we've been able to go through some of these. The government of Iran, which is, of course, the island right there in the next to Saudi Arabia, right in that area, Bahrain it's sometimes called. The governor of Bahrain is going to punish, and I quote, homosexual children. Yes, you heard it first right here on Strictly Confidential. They're calling for a study to find out how widespread homosexuality is in Bahrain. The government of Bahrain is taking action to stamp out homosexuals in the country. And they've set out a number of initiatives designed to get rid of homosexuals. They have demanded, Parliament's demanded, that the Interior Ministry stop granting residence permits to foreign homosexuals. And they've called for more than one study. Now, Bahrain is known as more one of the more tolerant Muslim nations in the Middle East, but it's recently undergone a period of, well, dare I say, fundamentalism, at least about us. In many ways, their society has become more progressive, more politically liberal. However, homosexuality, by golly, remains a crime, and the government has periodically deported people who are living in the nation who are not natives, expatriates, for their sexual orientation. Now, you gotta love this. Since 2002, the politicians have mainly addressed moral issues. And guess what they are? Banning female mannequins from shop windows. Oh, that'll help. We can't have any more plastic women in the shop windows. If you want to see this dress, you got to damn well walk into the store and try it on. They're also extremely concerned about legislation to stop the widespread problem of sorcery. Can't make this stuff up. Telling you the honest to God truth, I would not lie to you about this. The ministers have called for homosexuals to be, and I quote, rooted out of hair salons. I'm sorry. And massage parlors. These people are either from the Philippines or Thailand, and they come here for these two jobs only. Those are hair salons and massage parlors. And they use those as a curtain for their homosexual behavior and immorality. Imagine that. I wonder if that's going on in the United States, in our hair salons and massage parlors. Can you imagine? I mean, surely it must be a huge problem to consume the country to that degree. This must have international ramifications. The proposal instructs teachers to look out for homosexual tendencies in children and punish them accordingly. That's right. Not only can little Johnny not use his left hand to write, little Johnny gets his pee-pee whacked if he starts looking at little Jeffrey that way. And you have to wonder, is this just Bahrain? Or maybe it goes back to 1956 when the British Empire controlled that island and gave them the penal code that they're, I love to say penal code, especially when it comes to the laws against us. It's just so... You know, you just couldn't come up with a better word than penal code. Homosexuals are given up to 10 years in prison. And in recently, as 2002, they've deported 2,000 hairdressers and massage parlor workers for homosexual activity and prostitution. Well, honey, I don't care how good you look. It's hard to sell it in a beauty shop. Oh, Lord, have mercy. Sell them in a beauty shop. World never ceases to amaze me. You know, we've talked in the past, speaking of that neck of the woods, about the gay teenagers who are facing a return to Iran. You recall one of the teenagers was in Britain on an educational passport, and while he was in Britain, in Iran, in their effort to eradicate the LGBT community, his boyfriend was arrested, accused of debauchery. He was tortured, and he was bitten. Well, he was probably bitten, too. He was tortured, and he was beaten. Excuse me, folks, it's been a long day. I've reached the legal age of being able to... When you get 55, you'll understand how you could go from beaten to bitten. In any case, his boyfriend was executed after being tortured, and his boyfriend, under torture, gave up the 19-year-old man's name. He sought sanctuary in Britain in 2005 when he discovered his partner was hung in Tehran for engaging in a debauchery. The young man fled from Britain to Holland. If you'll recall, we reported that story too, because the offices in Britain were not acting. He was afraid he would be deported back to Iran. So because they were moving so slowly versus the expiration of his passport, so he went to Holland to ask for asylum there. They said they were going to send him back to Britain. He believed he had a better chance of protection in Holland. The Iraq police, Iran, which is confusing, is it not? Arrested by Iranian police and charged with sodomy and was hung. And the telephone conversation that the young man, the 19-year-old in Britain, had with his father His father was very angry at the young man and said that if he came back to Iran, and that if the government did not execute him, he would kill him himself. That's his own father saying that. There's absolutely no doubt that the young man will be arrested and executed if he's sent back there. They've already shown up at his house with warrants for his arrest. Of course, his father is very angry, but his mother still loves him. But women have no power in a country like that. So this case is being reviewed again, along with another fellow who is also seeking to take asylum in Britain. His name is unpronounceable. He's 40 years old, and he too is going to face physical punishment and being thrown off a cliff or stoning or lashes if he is returned to Britain. He was studying English and science and is scared to go back because his friends were beaten and tortured, and they had to give his name up also. So he's been outed. This came up the other evening. He was refused asylum because a British judge denied the request on the grounds that Iran does not systematically persecute homosexuals. However, Iran does not officially recognize homosexuality, therefore they don't persecute homosexuals. Do you love the paradox? This is what they're dealing with. The offices in Britain are saying, we examine with great care the individual cases, and if we believe that he would be harmed, we would not return him. The young man, of course, is terrified over being turned over. His uncle is saying that he's a very quiet and shy boy, and he will have absolutely no chance to run after he is returned to Iran. They will meet him at the plane or the boat or whatever and immediately begin the punishment. The other fellow, the 40-year-old, and I made a gender error. Imagine that. The 40-year-old is a lesbian. Now, she is currently awaiting her partner, who was tortured and gave up her name, is awaiting stoning in Iran. It's a capital crime, that neck of the woods. There are no human rights. It is very, 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 very dangerous. People are saying it's getting considerably worse. There is a fatwa. Human rights groups are becoming involved. However, the world governments are not speaking very loudly about it. And the reason I tell you this whole story, I've bordered on some of the details I told you this evening, and we've talked about what's going on in Iran and Iraq for a while. The reason I bring this all up is George Galloway. You remember George Galloway? George Galloway is quite a hero here. He's a hero to me. I know he was a hero to the Hit On Radio Network listeners. George Galloway had the nerve, he had the audacity to stand up to the United States Congress, Senate, House, and tell them, he read them the Riot Act. He told them off quite soundly regarding, you recall back in the day, the Downing Street memo? And we played his audio clip on the network many, many, many times. This was approximately a year or so ago. And we were all dazzled at George Galloway for standing up the way no other American political figure has ever stood up and stated the truth. I'd like you to remind you of what George Galloway said. I've sent an audio clip to the studio of George Galloway's remarks. Some of you will remember it vividly. If not, it will bring it back to you. Bob, please run the clip called George Galloway.
I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq. And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies. I told the world that Iraq, contrary to your claims, did not have weapons of mass destruction. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to Al-Qaeda. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to the atrocity on 9/11/2001. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that the Iraqi people would resist a British and American invasion of their country, and that the fall of Baghdad would not be the beginning of the end, but merely the end of the beginning. Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right, and you turned out to be wrong.
Wow! Did he ever stand up and read the Riot Act? He was kicking butt. He was taking names. He spoke. He dared to speak to Congress. He dared to speak to the citizens of this country who had the fortune enough to actually see it, or the video from that. Was carefully concealed by the mainstream media. It wasn't concealed here. Primarily, the only people that know about that is the people who listen to Head On Radio Network and read the many fine left-leaning blogs on the Internet. The people who are informed and who turn off the television sets and tune in to what's going on in this country. Very few people know about George Galloway and the heroic stand he took in Congress in this country. He's from London, mind you, yet he came here and had the nerve to say, you should have seen Congress was like, oh, yeah, yeah, well, yeah, 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 yeah. They were floored. Never has such honesty been spoken in that chamber before. Which is why I am so disappointed now in Galloway and his stand on these Iranians, the 19-year-old, to be specific, and the 40-year-old lesbian woman. He has come out and said that the boyfriend of the Iranian asylum seeker was not executed in Iran because he happened to be gay. He was executed for sex crime. Yes, in fact, the boyfriend that gave up the 19-year-old's name, who is living in London, was accused of sex crimes. In fact, we did this story a while back when it happened. There were three young men that this man is supposed to have raped. The three young men have all recanted what they said. They have all said that they said what they did about the 19-year-old under torture and under duress, that they were in fact not raped by this man. Of this 19-year-old man, and that they were simply tortured to say that he did. So once the boyfriend was arrested, the boyfriend was tortured and gave up his boyfriend living in England. I know this is all complicated. He and they and thee, and it's difficult to follow it. But nonetheless, George Galloway has come down hard saying that the boyfriend in Iran was not executed because he was gay. He was executed for sex crimes. Now, of course, in Iran, you're arrested for being simply gay or suspected of it. The 19-year-old said that there's a warrant for his arrest as a result of the confession that he's going to be facing execution. But to make it even worse, Galloway has now come out and said that this is part of an ongoing propaganda against Iran. Imagine that. The powerful LGBT agenda. We're saying these things because we're in a conspiracy to portray Iran in a bad light. That's a quote. It's part of an ongoing propaganda campaign. He's complaining about the newspapers. Galloway is saying, all the papers seem to imply that you get executed in Iran for being gay. That's not true. What? What? Gay rights group Outrage, for example, over in the London area, has challenged Galloway to provide proof. It says, we're calling on George Galloway to explain the source of the claim that his boyfriend had committed sex crimes. outrage, or in fact no other human rights group has ever seen anything, any evidence to suggest that the 19-year-old's partner was a rapist or a sexual abuser. Mr. Galloway's claim that gay people are not executed in Iran is rebuffed every day by every reputable human rights body, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. Not just those LGBT organizations, you know, not them ones with the agenda, the real human rights groups like the Amnesty International. But nonetheless, well, hear it for yourself. Bob, please run the Galloway, the George Galloway clip, the one regarding sex.
The Independent has a story about peers calling upon the Home Secretary to halt the deportation of a gay Iranian. In part, this is being used as part of the ongoing propaganda against Iran. All the papers seem to imply that you get executed in Iran being gay. That's not true.
His boyfriend was hung, though,
yes,
wasn't he?
Yes, not for being gay, for committing sex crimes against young men.
George Galloway, my hero, fallen from grace. How could he be so brave to confront the United States Senate with the truth and yet believe this, and to defend it on Iran? Now, he's saying that the Galloway, further into that, says that, well, I don't think his boyfriend was not put to death because of his orientation, because of sex crimes. He stuck to that, but he did eventually say that the 19-year-old shouldn't be returned, only because this has now become so public, this propaganda campaign against Iran, this well-orchestrated, well-oiled machine of the homosexual agenda, this has become so prominent now amongst the news organizations that the 19-year-old would be executed when he returned to Iran simply for speaking propaganda against Iran, for speaking lies against Iran. Imagine that. George Galloway, my hero, what have you done? What Kool-Aid have you been sipping on? Well, let's see. It's about 9:43. I've been rambling on for about 40 minutes. I think we should take a little break. As I told you earlier in the evening, the Gay Bar Across the Street segment will be done by our dear friend Larry Sanders. And Larry Sanders has provided a couple of go-to-break tracks for us tonight. You know, the DJs that we have on this show as guests and in the Gay Bar Across the Street, and indeed the DJs who are remixing some of this music, are some of the world's best. Larry Sanders has a particular advantage, though, I have to point out. You see, Larry Sanders grew up in Detroit. Yes, Larry Sanders grew up in Ground Zero of Motown. And oh, what a difference that makes. Larry Sanders is the godfather of remixing some absolutely stunning Motown music that you have never heard. The track that we're about to run is called Roots of Love. Now, it was released, remixed by Larry and released on Sandpiper 12, his 12th volume, which is available over at MorningstarMelody.com. This remix was done in November of 07. It was done just late last year. I personally have become a little bit strung out, shall we say, on Roots of Love. I've been playing it over and over and over again. One, it's a Motown track I never heard. Two, it's absolutely fabulous. And three, it's been extended by Larry Sanders, remixed by Larry, and to from 4 minutes 11 to 6 minutes 17. So this is from Sandpiper Volume 12, Mr. Larry Sanders' remix of Roots of Love by Quiet Elegance. Roll it, Bob. Wow. I've got to tell you, I plugged that CD in the car the other day. I haven't listened to all of the Sandpiper series. I plugged that CD in the car the other day, and that song just blew me away. Have never, ever heard that song before. Yet, Larry Sanders had it in his mind. You know, growing up in Detroit and growing up during the very beginnings of Motown, indeed, make Larry Sanders worthy of the world's most dangerous DJ level. If you love the old Motown sound like I do, stop by MorningstarMelody.com and you'll find out about all of the other tracks that are available there. In fact, we have another track we may get to this evening. If not, Larry will be playing in the dance floor across the street. You know, it's amazing, isn't it? Well, the military tries to keep us out for fear of our ruining the morale of the military. Don't want us to get married. We're not getting executed in Iran. When the truth of the fact is, the truth of the matter is, there are gay folks listening to songs about love, remixing them. You know, I have to admire that spirit of the entire LGBT community in the face of what we have been through, everything from lobotomies to shock treatment to play in the porn while they give us drugs to induce vomiting. Not making any of it up. Speaking of being proud of the LGBT community, I have the most wonderful piece from Melba Jackson. Melba sent this to us. Melba sent it a week or so ago and haven't been able to get to it. You recall Melba Jackson. Melba has been on the show before. Brother Russell is Melba Jackson. Melba is the fellow who has the uncanny ability to call in to right-wing radio and right-wing, even the right-wing Christian radio, where they're unabashedly raising funds and beating up on the LGBT. Melba phones in, and she's this sweet little old lady, and she has a remarkably... We've got to get Melba back on this show. Melba is a trip. In any case, this particular article was sent to us by Brother Russell, and we haven't gotten to it yet. You know, George Bush is going to be, he can't spend all of his time clearing up the brush at his ranch in Texas. Of course, he'll probably sell the ranch. The ranch is strictly for his presidential image. He'll probably sell the ranch and move back to Kennebunkport, Maine, or was it Connecticut somewhere? As the rich silver spoon fellow that he really is, he is not a homegrown Texan, as many people still believe. In fact, there have been many jokes and articles written about his phony Texas accent by people who say, and this is the way you say it in Texas. In any case, he will be looking for a job. Now, Melba has taken the time to send to us George W. Bush's resume, which I have read through and have to shake my head at. If everything I'm about to read to you is true, every word of it I'm about to read to you, if this were known in 2004, if the media would just talk about this, you know, the lying sack of vermin that we called ABC and CBS and NBC and CNN and Fox News, if they would just talk about this, what a different world this would be if this information were available, if his resume were actually put out in its true form. In 2000, you can be quite sure things would turn out very differently. But, you know, woe is the country. It's hard to look back on it. But I'm about to give you a truthful George Bush resume. He will be searching for a job. By the way, I was asked recently about the George Bush Library and what the outcome of that was for having the George Bush Presidential Library at the Methodist, SMU, Southern Methodist University campus in Texas. And as I've told you in the past, that remains in limbo, although the Bush administration and the media has told you it's all go. It remains in limbo until later this week, starting April 25th in Fort Worth, Texas. Will be the Southern Methodist or the Methodist Church, that region of the Methodist Church, will be having their meeting, their conference, and it will be highly debated about having the George Bush Library there. You know, I have to shake my head in shame to be a Methodist and realize that there's any chance of the George Bush Presidential Library being at the Southern Methodist University, using the Southern Methodist name to rubber stamp these criminals. But that's another story, and we'll get to that next week after the results of the conference is known. George W. Bush, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., 20520. Resume. Section 1, Education and Experience. Law Enforcement. I was arrested in Kennebunkport, Maine in 1976 for driving under the influence of alcohol. I pled guilty, I paid a fine, and I had my driver's license suspended for 30 days. My Texas driving record has been lost, in quotes, and is not available. Military. I joined the Texas Air National Guard and went AWOL. I refused to take a drug test or answer any questions about my drug use. And by joining the Texas Air National Guard, I was able to avoid combat duty in Vietnam College. I graduated from Yale University with a low C average. I was a cheerleader. And in the past work experience section, I ran for U.S. Congress and lost. I began my career in the oil business in Midland, Texas in 1975. I bought an oil company but couldn't find any oil in Texas. The company went bankrupt shortly after I sold all my stock. I bought the Texas Rangers baseball team in a sweetheart deal that took land using taxpayers' money. With the help of my father and friends in the oil industry, including Enron CEO Ken Lay, I was elected governor of Texas. Accomplishments as governor of Texas. I changed Texas pollution laws to favor power and oil companies, making Texas the most polluted state in the Union. During my tenure, Houston replaced Los Angeles as the most smog-ridden city in the country. I cut taxes and bankrupted the Texas Treasury to the tune of billions in borrowed money. I set the record for the most executions by any governor in American history. With the help of my brother, the governor of Florida, and my father's appointments to the Supreme Court, I became president of the United States after losing by over 500,000 votes. In the section called Accomplishments as the President, I'm the first president in U.S. history to enter office with a criminal record. Gee, it sort of sounds like the military issuing waivers. A lot of that going around, apparently. I invaded and occupied two countries at a continuing cost of over $1 billion, billion dollars per week. I spent the U.S. surplus and effectively bankrupted the U.S. Treasury. I shattered the record for the largest annual deficit in U.S. history. I set an economic record for the most private bankruptcies filed in any 12-month period. I set an all-time record for the most foreclosures in any 12-month period. I set the all-time record for the biggest drop in the history of the U.S. stock market. In my first year in office, over 2 million Americans lost their job, and that trend continues. I'm proud that the members of my cabinet are the richest of any administration in U.S. history. My poorest millionaire, Condoleezza Rice, has a Chevron oil tanker named after her. I set the record for the most campaign fundraising trips by a U.S. president. I'm the all-time U.S. and world record holder for receiving the most corporate campaign donations. My largest lifetime campaign contributor, and my dear friend Kenneth Lay, presided over the largest corporate bankruptcy fraud in U.S. history, Enron. My political party used Enron private jets and corporate attorneys to assure my success with the U.S. Supreme Court during the election decision. I have protected my friends at Enron and Halliburton against investigation or prosecution. More time and money was spent investigating the Monica Lewinsky affair than has been spent investigating one of the biggest corporate ripoffs in history. I presided over the biggest energy crisis in U.S. history and refused to intervene when corruption involving the oil industry was revealed. I presided over the highest gasoline prices in U.S. history. I changed the U.S. policy to allow convicted criminals to be awarded government contracts. I have appointed more convicted criminals to my administration than any president in U.S. history. I created the Department of Homeland Security, the largest bureaucracy in the history of the United States government. I've broken more international treaties than any president in the U.S. history. I'm the first president in the U.S. history to have the United Nations remove the U.S. from the Human Rights Commission. I withdrew the United States from the World Court of Law. I refused to allow inspectors access to U.S. prisoners of war, detainees, and thereby have refused to abide by the Geneva Convention. I am the first president in history to refuse United Nations election inspectors during the 2002 U.S. election. I have set the record for the fewest number of press conferences of any president since the advent of television. I set the all-time record for most days on vacation in any one-year period. After taking off the entire month of August, I presided over the worst security failure in U.S. history. I garnered the most sympathy ever for the U.S. after the World Trade Center attacks, and less than a year later made the U.S. the most hated country in the world, the largest failure of diplomacy in world history. I've set the all-time record for the most people worldwide to simultaneously protest me in a public venue, 15 million people, shattering the records for protest against any person in the entire history of the planet. I'm the first president in U.S. history to order an unprovoked preemptive attack and military occupation of a sovereign nation. I did so against the will of the United Nations. I did so against the majority of U.S. citizens and the world community. I have cut health care benefits for war veterans and support. I have cut in benefits for active duty troops and their families in wartime. In my State of the Union address, I lied about our reasons for attacking Iraq, and then I blamed the lies on the Britons. Now, of course, it was George Galloway. I digress. George Galloway was our hero, which is one of the reasons George Galloway came over here to read the Riot Act, because little Georgie was blaming the whole Britons. So that was how George Galloway ended up in front of the Senate. I am the first president in history to have a majority of Europeans, 71%, view my presidency as the biggest threat to world peace and security. I am supporting development of a nuclear tactical bunker buster, a weapon of mass destruction. I have so far failed to fulfill my pledge to bring Osama bin Laden to justice. And the last section, records and references. All records of my tenure as governor of Texas are now in my father's library, sealed and unavailable for public view. All records of the SEC investigations into my insider trading and my bankrupt companies are sealed in secrecy and unavailable for the public to view. All records are minutes from meetings that I or my vice president attended regarding public energy policy are sealed in secrecy and unavailable for public review. And last but not least, I specified that my sealed documents will not be available for 50 years. And I believe that has changed now to forever. Thank you so much, Melba. What a wonderfully refreshing view, George W. Bush. It's a little bit hard to take that much truth all at once, is it not, listeners? But I thought it was high time we We presented this, and thank you, Melba. We presented it all at once as a big old bitter pill. As I've said before on this program, were I the king of the world, I would require a written apology for every registered Republican in the United States before they could ever vote again. And perhaps a written apology from every log cabin LGBT Republican, along with public booing. I think they deserve that. Lord have mercy. I'm going to talk a minute about... remember Gene Robinson? He was the elected... he was the Episcopal bishop elected in New Hampshire in 2003. It's called a... caused a... quite a schism in the Episcopal Church. In Africa, the African section is raising holy hell that a homosexual can be involved. In fact, the Nigerian Archbishop Akinola calls the event satanic when Gene Robinson was elected the Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire. Called it satanic, but oh, there is another side of that coin. You want satanic? Let's talk about the man who said that, Akinola himself. You see, over in the Nigerian town of Unpronounceable, back in February of 2004, Muslim fanatics attacked Christian worshipers. They set fire to the church. They murdered anyone who tried to escape. They left 78 people dead. This is, of course, despicable and deplorable. In retaliation, however, members of the Christian Association of Nigeria, which was at the time led by this man who is saying that we are satanic. This Christian association, led by the Nigerian archbishop, surrounded the town. His vigilantes murdered 660 Muslims. They torched 12 mosques. They torched 300 houses. Instead of asking, what would Jesus do? They raped pregnant Muslim women in the village. They forced Muslims to eat pork and dog meat while washing it down with forbidden alcohol. They hacked to death children as young as 9 with machetes. They took those bloody pieces and stuffed them in rubber tires, put the rubber tires around their parents' heads, and set them on fire. This is not retaliation, people. This is terrorism. This is demonic behavior in the name of religion, and it had not a damn thing to do with self-defense. Yes, this is the view of the Nigerian archbishop who is dividing the Episcopal Church over the appointment of Gene Robinson, the Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire. Clearly, this man is unrepentant. He sounds more like a warlord than a leader. No six, he supported the proposed law in Nigeria that would have effectively banned the promotion of homosexuality, punishing violators up to 10 years imprisonment. I must tell you what promoting homosexuality meant in that country. Handing out condoms, for one thing, to prevent the devastating spread of AIDS in that country. That would be promoting homosexuality. They seem to have completely forgotten the uses for condoms for birth control. It's seen as a homosexual thing now. Any sort of counseling or attempting to help people who are transsexual in any way, that would be promoting homosexuality. Talking about LGBT communities in public schools so that the next generation of little boys and girls don't grow up hating us, that's promotion of homosexuality. Do these things under this satanic leader, you'll get 5 years in prison. At least, you know, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama should not just denounce this man. They should come out solidly against this man to regain any of their moral authority. the only appropriate place for the Nigerian archbishop who is successfully dividing the Episcopal Church, so cleverly appealing to the ignorance of this country to accomplish it. The only appropriate place for that man is in The Hague, where he should be tried for crimes against humanity. You know, it's funny, the people that hate us are just evil to the very, very core. Oh, they are so skilled in love the sinner but hate the sin, which is not biblical, by the way. What's biblical is forgive the sinner, but it has been perverted by the mainstream KKK Christians to be love the sinner, hate the sin. But in reality, there is no love there whatsoever. And it always goes deeper. You know, every time these people, the child abuse, the sneaking around behind their wives, the things that we have uncovered about these conservatives. You know, I love my dear doggy to death, but I wouldn't even want my dog to be babysat by one of these people. I mean, I just, just can't bear it. Things that we discover every day here on the show. In an interesting development out of Hawaii, the University of Hawaii says that they are not going to allow a gay couple to move back into family housing after they'd already lived there for 1 year. See, the family housing is supported in part by the university. It's discounted housing for students. Joseph was working toward a history degree in 06-07, and he lived in the family housing with his partner, Phil. And when they reapplied for the family housing in 08, or 07, 08 rather, they were denied housing, saying that the housing is reserved for different sex couples. So the couple is now living in a far more expensive off-campus apartment that requires them to pay significant amounts for travel expenses. Had to give up his subsidized student meal plan. The extra cost to them amounts to several thousand dollars per year. And Lambda Legal got involved. And lo and behold, the University of Florida has announced that it will allow a gay couple who is threatening to sue to live on the campus in family housing. Officials announced Wednesday that the school is working on a policy to admit same-sex couples into family housing. Imagine that. You know, these people, all you have to do is just call them on it half the time, and they back down quickly. But boy, if they can keep the stink under wraps, if they can keep the prejudiced and unequal measure under wraps, they'll do it every time. But oh, how they flee when the light is shown on it. The very idea. The camp of the housing is only for penises and vaginas. We can't have none of this gay stuff here. You need to move along. Go get your coconut and your Hawaiian pineapples, and you just move along. We do not want you here. Let's see. Oh, I've got one for you. Might as well beat up the American Family Association. That's always an easy target for a Wednesday evening. They have a new DVD, and it's showing how homosexual activists took control of the city government in a small Christian resort community. Now, of course, this DVD is for sale. The DVD is called They're Coming to Your Town. We've taken some audio from it, which I'll ask Bob to run in a second. The DVD shows how a small group of homosexual activists, much like myself, took over the city council in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and began imposing their homosexual agenda on that community. Of course, the homosexual agenda, AFA style, is that you must turn over your children to us at the age of 6. And you must support naked parades and drag queens. In any case, the DVD clearly shows the American public that we're using deceitfulness and lies and homosexual maneuvers. I remember homosexual maneuvers. We don't have to go there. We put ourselves in a position of power. Bob, you have the audio there, I believe. It's called the American Family Association MP3.
It can happen to your town.
They've come out of the closet.
AFA presents a look at how a handful of homosexual activists infiltrated the Eureka Springs, Arkansas government and changed the very moral fiber of the city.
They are taking over a place that has been known for its Christianity.
They branded us as fundamentalists, as Christian hate bigots.
Once homosexual activists get into power, they're not too tolerant toward other people.
Learn the strategies used by gay activists and don't let this happen to your city. This DVD is a must-teaching tool. Watch and learn how to fight a well-organized gay agenda to take over the cities of America, one city at a time.
If it's not happening in your town, get ready, because it is going to happen.
Show it at home, in Sunday schools, Bible studies, and community groups. Purchase your copy or a 5-pack to share with others today and spread the news. They're coming to your town.
Oh, my God. They're like totally coming to your town. And like apparently I'm like totally involved in leading the way. Good Lord. And of course this DVD is not cheap. It's runs 28 minutes. I think it's about $25-$30. And of course their advertising is forward this to everyone you know. Consider making a donation. It's tax deductible. You see, hate speech and ignorance is tax deductible in this country. Has been for quite a long time. They're coming to your town. You know, see, for 40 years, Eureka Springs has been known as a resort town for Christians. But here's where the Christians went wrong. Oh, glory. Bob points out in production chat there was even a disco background to the advertisement you saw. I have to chuckle at that. Yes, it was a little danceable. We just, those light feet, those light-footed boys, the... There was a song title, the lyric, The Love Spark of High-Heeled Boys, was not a lyric. In any case, the Eureka Springs, here's where they went wrong. For 40 years, over to Eureka Springs, they've had a passion play. And the little town has become famous for it. This passion play has been attended by hundreds and thousands of Christians, and they lay siege upon the town of Eureka Springs. And, of course, now they're saying the homosexual activists are in the process of turning Eureka Springs into a haven for homosexuals. But my dear friends, my dear Christians from Eureka Springs, let me tell you where you went wrong. You staged a popular play. Don't you know that a popular play requires actors and makeup artists and wardrobe and hairstylists? And lighting men and audio men and women. Don't you know that a play is simply a breeding ground? It's like a culture disc. It's like growing a virus in a laboratory. You know, you cannot have a play without just attracting us like flies. The thing is that you should have never done a play in Eureka Springs, simply because you are going to find that we are attracted, can't stay away, and that's what happened to Eureka Springs. Speaking of Eureka Springs, just a little note, occasionally on this show, we talk about Conservapedia. For those of you who are new listeners, you may not know what Conservapedia is. Conservapedia is to the ignorant, well, Wikipedia is to us. It's a source of information, a community encyclopedia, if you will. Well, they were very, very distressed, these folks, that there was a Wikipedia that did not slant things their way. Articles on the dinosaurs, for instance, were entirely unacceptable. along with the what they call spin on reality. So I looked at this a couple of days ago. I stopped by Conservapedia to check the most viewed pages. And we do this from time to time. And I've got to tell you, the trend has not changed. No. The trend has not changed over at Conservapedia. Every time we look there, we see that it is a huge attraction for those people to look up homosexuality because they just can't get it off their minds. The top 10 most viewed pages at Conservapedia. Number 10, homosexuality and health. Now, there is one out of sequence. Number 9, they actually looked up Adolf Hitler. You can see there's this fascination with all things Hitler and homosexual. Number 8, homosexuality and choice. Number 7, ex-homosexuals. Number 6, the homosexual agenda. You don't need to go to Conservapedia for that. Just tune into this show. I'll give you the agenda. Number 5, arguments against homosexuality. Number 4, homosexuality and disease. Number 3, teen homosexuality. Number 2, homosexuality. And number 1, child abuse. That's what they're thinking about over in Conservapedia land. Just thought you'd like to know. You know, and that pesky thing, remember we've dared broach the subject of those penile strain gauges? You know, this is very unpleasant for those folks to think about, but it's the Department of Psychology in the University of Georgia. There's another study out, which has confirmed all the previous studies that we've talked about on the show. The authors investigated the role of homosexual arousal in exclusively heterosexual men who said that they had negative feelings toward homosexual individuals and described themselves as homophobic. Okay, so the participants consisted of a group of homophobic men and a group of non-homophobic men. And they were assigned groups on the basis of their scores on the index of homophobia, which I didn't realize there was one, but apparently there is an index of homophobia. Simply must get a hold of that. The men were exposed to sexually explicit erotic stimuli consisting of heterosexual, male homosexual, and lesbian videotapes. And the changes in penile circumference were monitored by these little penile strain gauges. Handy little devices, I would imagine. In any case, they also completed an aggression questionnaire. And here's the results. Just like all the results you've heard before. Both groups exhibited increases in penile circumference to the heterosexual and female homosexual videos. But only the homophobic men showed an increase in penile erection to male homosexual videos. Isn't that just amazing? Could this be what Donald Wildman is worried about? Could his penile erection be straining the gauge? Is that possible? Is his circumference not to his liking? When thinking about those hard muscular bodies rubbing against one another in the night. Now, the groups did not differ in aggression levels. There's an aggression test also, but the results. Here's the results. Here's the money shot. Homophobia is apparently associated with homosexual arousal that homophobic individuals deny or are unaware of. Imagine that. Methinks thou doth protest too much, my friend. Oh, Lord. Oh, speaking of the Bush Library. You know, they're after him to disclose his funding sources. Of course, the way it's put is, after settling on Southern Methodist University to house the library, This, of course, is a given, according to Lord, how I hope the conference in Texas reverses that. Bush said at a news conference regarding revealing who the donors are to his multi-million dollar project, Saudis. He says, some people don't like to give and don't particularly want their names disclosed, and so we'll take that into consideration, he said. He says he was asked whether the public has a right to know who's helping to finance his library. And he says, you know, we're weighing it. We're taking a look. We're taking consideration, giving it a serious consideration. The man makes my skin crawl. The library is expected to cost $250 million to build. Read that half a billion, since we know the methodology of the Bush administration, all of which will go to Halliburton or some other. Maybe they'll build it better than the American embassy in Iraq, which is falling apart. Wires sticking out of the wall and toilets flushing into the room below. Yes. Henry Waxman is saying when you have foreign governments and foreign business people and corporations giving huge amounts of money to a president for his library, the president is in a position to do favors for them. We need to know who. Bush said in closing, yeah, I'll probably take some foreign money, but we don't know yet. Anybody believe that? Raise their hands. I just want to see a show of hands. Nobody believes that. He says, we'll just announce the deal. I hate it when he says deal. The word just is like fingernails on a chalkboard. We'll just announce the deal. And frankly, I've been focused elsewhere, like on gasoline prices. Can't make this stuff up. I've frankly been focused elsewhere, like gasoline prices and, you know, my trip to Africa. And I haven't seen the fundraising strategy yet. Good Lord, you snake. It's only been being planned for Southern Methodist University since 2002 amongst the Board of Regents. It was a huge secret. Yeah. You know, the library, of course, is a sham. The real purpose is to build the ultra-conservative think tank that will be associated with the library and built next door or connection with. Or it's the think tank that is important. And it is important to the think tank to have the good name of Southern Methodist University attached to it to give it some credibility. The think tank will be devoted entirely to rewriting history in the name of a fool, Mr. George W. Bush. Dobson's got problems. But hey, we all knew that. I wonder what his strain gauge looks like. Ew. So sorry I thought of that. Dobson's looking for a new generation of evangelical leaders. I wonder why. He says that with a generation of U.S. Christian right leaders dead or aging, ding dong, the witch is dead. The founder of the conservative evangelical group Focus on the Family says he's concerned about the movement's future leadership. James Dobson told a group of Christian broadcasters, by the way, George Bush was at that National Association of Christian Broadcasters. What are the correct initials on that? I have it listed somewhere. But oh, yes, Bush was there. He addressed them. Bush addressed National Christian Broadcasters. He addressed the group. Of course, the media didn't cover it, but he addressed the group and said he would fight very hard to ever bring back the fairness doctrine, because the fairness doctrine, you recall back years ago, when if you said something from one party, you would have to have equal time for somebody else. But it would threaten Ann Coulter, it would threaten Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity, and we can't have it. That was a lie propagated by the liberals, and we had to get rid of it. We'll never get it. And he assured the Christian broadcasters that the fairness doctrine That was why he was there. But in any case, James Dobson also spoke, and he told a group of Christian broadcasters that the passing of Jerry Falwell and the Carl Snake Ministries Reverend D. James Kennedy, and that Ruth Graham Bell's passing represent the end of an era. Where are my dancing shoes? The radio talk show host noted others like Billy Graham. You see, Dobson is now a radio talk show host. He retired from Focus on the Family, and he's just like me and Bob and John and Mark and all the other hosts on this network. He's just like us. He's a radio talk show host. In any case, he noticed that Billy Graham and Chuck Colson and Pat Robertson and Chuck Swindoll are also soon going to pass from the scene. And he's questioning the impact on the conservative Christian movement. It causes me to wonder who will be left to carry the banner when this generation of leaders is gone. Jesus Christ, I could so not have sat through that. Dobson told an audience of nearly 1,400 people at the National Religious, here it is, the NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters Conference. The question is, will the younger generation heed the call? Who will defend the unborn child in the years to come? And this takes the cake. Who will plead for the Terry Schiavos of the world? Yes, indeed. Who will plead for the brain dead when their family attempts to do the right thing? Who's going to fight for the institution of marriage? Well, the LGBT community, for one thing. He says that the institution of marriage is on the ropes. Dobson says this at a time that national groups like the Christian Coalition are struggling, and that the organizational muscle of the movement now rests with local pastors and not national figures. Former Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee, who stepped out of the race last week, had won widespread support among the pastors and evangelicals at the local level, but not with those heading the influential national organizations. No, Mike Huckabee cannot play in our Christian playground. No, we don't want no homosexuals, and we don't want no Mike Huckabees. Christian activists and other observers of the movement say that the next generation of leaders isn't as interested in polarizing debates and wants to broaden the evangelical agenda beyond divisive issues like abortion and gay marriage. Who, Dobson says, in the next generation will be willing to take the heat when it's so much safer and more comfortable to avoid controversial subjects? You know, I think Bob would agree with me. It's much safer and comfortable to avoid being a progressive talk show guy, huh? But that's a whole different subject. Dobson said, what will be the impact on conservative Christian churches when the patriarchs have passed? Dobson, 71, with a bullet. I had it in the bullet. Dobson, 71, said that many of his comments on Tuesday were the same he made at Carl Snake Ministries Kennedy's funeral last fall when he told those who were attending he's praying for the next generation of Christians and that they will answer God's call to take up the mantle of leadership. And bless God, I hope they do, but not the perverted hate speech that is your brand. He compliments Billy Graham for having led the way for America's religious broadcasters. Well, he may have led the way, but the ones that followed him certainly perverted it. He brought the gospel to millions. And then he talks a little about Falwell. He talks a little about this, that, and the other. Nothing of any importance that we haven't heard before. Just wanted to let you know, though, that George W. Bush was there. Yes, in fact, George W. Bush was there. And he spoke to them about the fairness doctrine. Yes, he did. We will never have that back again. because it might affect Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter. And we certainly wouldn't want to have that now, would we? Well, let's see. I've rambled for another 40 minutes. I guess you can tell my whistle needs wetting. It's time for the Paradise Dance Hall Act. We should head on over to the dance hall in a moment. The gay bar across the street, otherwise known as the Paradise Dance Hall, sometimes called God's Little Gay Bar. And tonight, we are honored to have Mr. Larry Sanders, the world's most dangerous yet lovable DJ, playing for us at the gay bar across the street, God's Little Gay Bar / Paradise Dance Hall. So many names, such a wonderful play. This particular section is from Larry Sanders' Rushad mix, Volume 1. All of this is what you're about to hear and the song that you heard earlier. All of it's available over at MorningstarMelody.com. And so you really should take a look. Larry Sanders, being the Detroit DJ, makes him quite dangerous. So as we head across the street and pick up our umbrellas and head on over to the Paradise Dance Hall, we're going to postpone Paradise Dance Hall for just a moment. Studio says we need to postpone that for just a moment. Not sure exactly why, but I imagine it's those gay guys dancing too fast from the dance hall across the street. And so we'll talk a little bit about another topic. Bob is saying that the players are refusing to open. Hope he can get that taken care of. Let's have a look here at some of the other news. Yes, in the more bad news department, we have two sisters sentenced to be stoned to death for adultery. Yes, and you can just imagine where that is, my listeners. The sisters are in Iran. You know, the place that doesn't persecute gay folks and doesn't stone women to death. The two sisters are sentenced to be stoned for death for adultery. The announcement was made after they were accused by their respective husband and brother of adultery, their very own brother. Okay. I'll tell you the rest of this. The legal atrocity in Iran was when the husband, who appeared to believe that they had marital problems, are best resolved by stoning to death. And he set up a camera and caught his wife and sister meeting men. There was no illicit contact, but just the fact that they met was enough. They were sentenced to being flogged, but he wasn't happy with that, and he went for a second trial, which is perfectly okay in Iran if it's women involved, and sentenced them to die. So I believe we have the turntables repaired over at the Paradise Dance Hall, and again, we bring you Larry Sanders at the gay bar across the street.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts would tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, the chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me.
If you could
Okay, my friends, we had to fade out of that one a little bit early. We got a little bit of a late start due to the player issue, and the burst there was not Larry Sanders. That was an evil player rearing its ugly head. In any case, thank you so much, Larry Sanders, for that piece. The world's most dangerous DJ, aptly called so because he was in Detroit during the time of Motown. And we appreciate your participating in the gay bar across the street. www.morningstarmelody.com is where you can find out about Larry Sanders' music. Need to announce that, in fact, we are having a horn section this evening. Myself, John Fox, and Bob Kincaid will be bantering about the table shortly. Need to announce that tomorrow night's guest on Strictly Confidential is Man Parrish. And I'm looking forward to that. He is a well-known artist on the dance floor and is still very active. Man Parrish will be with us tomorrow evening. I should also tell you that horn section will start shortly after the end of Strictly Confidential. We are going to do a very quick maintenance cycle. We'll probably be a couple of minutes late starting the horn section. So don't go away. You may hear the music you can't dance to, which is the classical, or you may hear silence for just a moment between the two shows. So in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...
Oh,